Chapter 15. Next day, the Bagthorpes were up at dawn, raring to go. They had a hasty and noisy breakfast, with the exception of Mr. Bagthorpe, who was still fast asleep. William collected all the waterproofs in the house, because there had been a very heavy dew, and everyone except Grandma and Grandpa would be sitting on the ground. With enormous anticipation, they then set out into the unaccustomed stillness of early morning. The birds were whistling, and a milky haze hung in the distance. "It feels like going on holiday," Jack said. "Come on, Zero, old chap, you're going to guard." "My fingers feel all shaky," Rosie confided in them all. "I'm so excited I don't know if I'll be able to use them properly." "Then you must pull yourself together," Grandma told her. "Daisies are a precious commodity. We do not want any unnecessary wastage." The daisies were pulled out and spread in the middle of the lawn. There seemed acres of them, lying thickly in the kind of quantities nobody had ever seen them before. Their appearance produced a temporary awed silence. "We are embarking on a task of Herculean proportions," Tess remarked at last. "Personally, I would rather tackle the Augean stables." "We want none of that kind of defeatist talk," Grandma snapped. "Where is your spirit?" They all arranged themselves round, and Grandma picked up a handful of daisies and placed them in her lap. "I shall now thread the first two daisies," she announced, making this moment into a kind of grand opening ceremony. "Daisy will then thread the next. The rest of you can start in whatever order you like." They watched as she carefully nipped the stem of one daisy and passed through the slit the stem of another. She then looked triumphantly about her, as if expecting a round of applause. None was forthcoming. "It is fortunate that none of us bite our nails," Grandma observed, and it was, of course. Jack had used to, but had given it up after Zero became famous. After that, they all began. They worked fast, and in almost total silence, because they were as yet overcome by the enormity of what they were attempting. They had been working for well over an hour, and getting to the point where they were having to spread farther apart to avoid tangling their chains, when Mrs. Fosdyke arrived. She came up the drive at a brisk hedgehog trot, and they heard her footsteps, though they could not see her. "Here, Mrs. Fosdyke," called Mrs. Bagthorpe. She was not being allowed to thread, but Grandma had said she could keep everybody else supplied with daisies. She realized afterward that she should have got up, joined Mrs. Fosdyke, and explained slowly and carefully what was taking place, to break her in gently. As it was, next moment Mrs. Fosdyke's head poked through a shrub, disembodied like the Cheshire cat's, but unlike that cat, not smiling. Her expression was one of horror and downright disbelief. She blinked her eyes rapidly, evidently not trusting them. "Oh, my good gracious," she exclaimed at last. "Now what?" "We are making the longest daisy chain in the world, Mrs. Fosdyke," Grandma called gaily. She had by now worked into a kind of rhythm with her daisies, and her hands were moving with a regular action as though she were crocheting or knitting. She gave the impression that, now she had started, she was never going to stop. "I don't believe it," Mrs. Fosdyke said flatly. She pushed right past the shrub and stood there clutching her black plastic carrier, staring about her. "I don't believe it," she repeated, as if by so doing she could make the whole scene disappear. It seemed to Mrs. Fosdyke, who had been the witness of innumerable Bagthorpian holocausts, that the peaceful, innocent tableau that now lay before her was the most unnerving sight of her career with them. It was still not yet 8 o'clock, and they sat steadily and patiently threading, as if they might have been there all night, or even from time immemorial. If Mrs. Fosdyke had ever read Kafka, or had known about surrealism, she would have recognized the disturbing quality they invoked. But she had not, and could only struggle to find the right words to describe how she had felt later, in the fiddler's arms. "You don't expect a turn like that, 8 o'clock in the morning," she told her interested audience. "It ain't in nature, young and old alike, sitting like statures, putting daisies together as if they was snow white. If I was 10 years older, I should have dropped dead at my own feet." At the time, she simply stood rooted to the spot, trying to order her thoughts. "We have breakfasted already," Grandma told her, "but I am sure we would all appreciate a cup of tea when you have a moment." "Cup of tea," Mrs. Fosdyke repeated mechanically. "Cup of tea." She disappeared among the foliage away toward the sanity of her kitchen, the kettle, and the teapot. Jack was excused for several minutes to go and help her carry the trays of tea. He found her tracking about the kitchen and talking to herself. "I've come to help carry," he told her, in a fairly loud voice, to be sure of getting through to her. She stopped and stared at him. "They're sitting out there, making daisy chains," she told him, as if hoping to be contradicted. "I saw them. I saw them with me own eyes." "That's right," he agreed. "I know it seems a bit funny, but..." "Ought I to telephone somebody?" she wondered aloud. At this point, Mr. Bagthorpe entered. "Where are they?" he demanded. "On the front lawn," Jack told him. "Making daisy chains?" "Yes. Well, we did tell you we were." Mrs. Fosdyke was astonished to see Mr. Bagthorpe. She had assumed that he, as the maddest of the lot, had been among the chain makers, that he was, in fact, their organizer. If all the Bagthorpes had gone mad except him, then the plot, so far as she was concerned, was thickening. "The Sunday Times will approach my house, and will find my entire family, including my own mother, up to their ears in daisies," said Mr. Bagthorpe, summing up the situation for himself. "Nothing like this can ever have happened to a serious writer before. Would Shakespeare have survived, I wonder, or Tolstoy or Milton, if any of their families were on record as having been discovered like this? Could we now take Othello seriously, or Paradise Lost, if this were so?" "I suppose you couldn't pretend we weren't your family," Jack suggested helpfully. Mr. Bagthorpe turned on him a weary gaze. "So the situation improves," he said. "I have a bunch of complete strangers in my garden, looping miles of daisy chains around, and I pass it off. I say, 'Sorry the family isn't here to meet you. Just ignore that bunch of lunatics on the front lawn. It happens every day in the daisy season.'" "I suppose not," Jack admitted. A loud rush of gravel was heard in the ensuing silence. "That," said Mr. Bagthorpe, "is all I need." Uncle Parker had arrived to bring his wife to the daisy chaining. He was himself debarred from taking part because of Grandma's ruling about blood. "No reason why you shouldn't lend a hand, though, Henry," he told Mr. Bagthorpe, appropriating two of Mrs. Fosdyke's cups of tea for himself and Aunt Celia. "What a scoop for the color supplement this will be." "If it were not for your accursed daughter," Mr. Bagthorpe told him, "none of this would have happened." "That is the truth," cried Aunt Celia, surprisingly, "and we are proud to own it. Such poetry, such symbolism, and only 4 years of age." There was a moment's silence while everyone else present thought his or her own thoughts about Daisy. "Better get out there and see how they're doing," Uncle Parker said, "and get Aunt Celia started. Sure you won't come, Henry?" Aunt Celia, with cooing and exclamations of bliss, took her place among the daisy threaders. Jack and Mrs. Fosdyke darted among them, passing cups of tea. "Delicious," remarked Grandma, pausing to take a sip. "I always think tea tastes so much better when one is making daisy chains." The morning wore on, and the chains lengthened by the minute. By lunchtime, the Bagthorpe lawn looked like a miniature maze with a lot of people lost in it. William, feeling this to be a marginally more manly role, had appointed himself overseer and measurer. Being Bagthorpes, they had been unable to resist setting up a race within a race, and were vying with one another to produce the longest individual chain. At present it looked as if Tess would win this, or Grandma. Aunt Celia was very nimble with her fingers, but lost much time going into reveries, during which she would sit with her hands folded in her lap, dreamily gazing about her, and presumably drinking in all the poetry and symbolism.